And it's time for us, as we always do on a Friday morning, to be joined by David Terechuk. David is, of course, the host of his own website, themediabeat.us. You can find David here on a Friday morning, a rebroadcast on the weekend, and also on, I do believe, Tuesdays in the noontime hour here on Robin Hood Radio. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and he joins us here again this morning. Good morning, David.
Hello, Marshall. Good to be with you again.
Now, where are you today?
Yes, I zip around these days, don't I? But in fact, I'm taking a break. I'm in one of the best places possible for someone who wants to, just for a little while, just think and write. I'm in the great state of Maine. It offers me a lot of what I just heard you describe in your local weather forecast as good sleeping weather. It's nice and cool here in Maine, and the nights are wonderful for rest, and the days are great for contemplation.
You know, I lived in Maine for a little over a year, and I was told that fall comes very quickly after July 4th, and I was told that on Labor Day...
That's true.
And on Labor Day, it's like the state... At day after Labor Day, the state has moved 600 miles to the north. And you know what? It was absolutely true the year I was there. But it's a beautiful state, it is. It's a nice state to just sit there and collect yourself. And you know what? We need a lot of collecting of ourselves with the battering ram of all the different stories that have flowed out over the past week or so.
Yeah, another ordinary week in America. Yeah, the reaction to the two mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, has gone in all the usual ways that we associate with these terrible events that happen with such appalling frequency in the most advanced country in the world, some people would say, and yet we are distinguished by being the only country that has this phenomenon to the extent that it does of mass shootings taking place of innocent civilians, and we've got the same old reactions day after day after day since the awful weekend, with the media playing its usual standard role. It's almost as if everyone's working off a songbook, the same old songbook, time after time. It's hard not to find it deeply depressing. And it's also interesting to see that as a consequence, I suppose, of everybody wanting to grasp at any kind of straw that might be in the wind, that there's a certain amount of wish fulfillment and perhaps excessive zeal on the part of the media now, on some of the media, getting terribly excited about a tiny shift in wordage that is discernible in the language of Senate leader Mitch McConnell, suggesting that he might be prepared to have a debate, an extraordinary shift, huh? A debate about some forms, possibly, of gun control when the Senate returns from its summer vacation. I just hesitate to think of this as a major story, but clearly... lots of the media do. I've got the scent of something big in the wind, and I'm not sure at all that they're right. I think we've been here before, and certain people talk about, you know, certain people in leadership positions will talk about the need for action about guns in America, and the same pattern repeats itself every time. When that just somehow or other manages to go away once again.
It's the only time it even has a possibility of changing is if the Democrats take control of the Senate, even by two votes, whatever. But the money that goes behind guns is not just spread through the Republican Party, might I remind everybody. It is spread liberally and into the Democratic Party as well. And as long as that money is on the table, you're just not going to ever see anything get a significant enough change to bring it back to the way it should be. It's just a sad truth of American politics.
there's something to watch. And it is largely a media story in the sense that public opinion, the needle may be moving in some way, and the media obviously plays a very large part in that. The money question does, of course, have central and fundamental importance, as you say. And with money, we can look at the activities of the mayors of America. They are possibly the most influential, or they could be. They could prove to be the most influential body with their desires for forms of sensible gun control. And the money behind them, of course, comes from former New York mayor, my local mayor, Mike Bloomberg, with enormous funds at his disposal and this particular organization's disposal. So we're beginning to see, I think, some evening out of the financial balance in this argument. And it will be interesting. Of course, high-profile events like this will bring things to the fore, and there is, of course, that old repeated pattern of them retreating from the fore as soon as people get settled back in their regular ways. But it's possible. I'm prepared to admit that it's possible there may be a shift going on that's a little wider, a little broader, and perhaps more fundamental than simply the Republican leader of a Republican-controlled Senate suggesting that they may have a debate this time.
Another story that just amazes me that people haven't delved deeper into, and that is what happened on the first day of school back for a lot of kids, and was the massive raid in the lower Midwest, where I guess between 600 and 1,000 illegal or undocumented aliens were rounded up at these big gigantic workplaces, but the government did not think far enough ahead.
Processing plants. Yeah.
To what would happen to the kids that were in school that no longer had anybody to pick them up, and it became another black eye. In the eye of this country, to round up 600 and some odd people, yes, to go into these big businesses, yes, but then to leave the, once again, there was no backup for what happened to the children of these families, and it's, once again, the President of the United States has been noted for hiring illegal or undocumented aliens in New Jersey. It's this whole thing, the way it's being handled is...
And in Mar-a-Lago Florida as well, yeah.
The way the media is handling this is really quite, really out of bounds, because this is a major story because it comes on the heels of course, the one shooter we definitely know wanted to go shoot Mexicans in El Paso. And This all ties in together, and I don't know how the news media really is going to try to cover this. We really miss the real big writers who used to write not only stories but in depth stories on these things, not beat reporters. I mean, more people have to realize the connections that are going on here.
Yeah, those raids were long in the planning, indeed, and they were telegraphed. They were telegraphed by the President of the United States, much to the chagrin of the ICE officials themselves, who were always pretty well prepared. Well, I don't know how pretty well prepared they are, but always have it in their ability, within their ability and capabilities to organize raids like this. I mean, there are many workers of this kind in the food processing industry, and it's well known. But as you say, to organize a raid without any sense of the collateral damage that is caused to families, and it's all of a piece with with the notion that from this administration that they can safely ignore in the face of public opinion activity and behavior that forgets entirely about the humanity of a situation, no matter what the legal case may be and whatever degree of criminality may be involved. When there are children affected by it, you know that they're not the criminals, and just a lack of 360 vision, which is, you know, one of the necessary qualifications for public responsibility.
And then the only headline is they released 300 of the X some large number of the people who were apprehended, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, roughly half have been released.
Released. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's sort of like, and what the two of you are talking around is, so now story's over. So if people even focused on it, except for the way that it was presented on certain cable networks, then they probably didn't focus on the other half of it, which is, okay, well, the reading between the lines in the massive releasing half of them is, oh boy, we blew this. Just as in, you know, when the president was doing his speech on Monday or whatever, somebody screwed up the spell check or whatever and put Toledo in, which is a happy conflation between El Paso and Dayton, because Ohio, you know, people... and it's just the sloppiness. No.
Spanish-sounding name, yeah.
It's, sure. It seems ideas are conceived, and like I'm not. Do I think what ICE does is correct most of the times? I've always had my problems with the way they handle, but under the Obama administration as well. But it's not a criticism of the actual formation of a raid. It's the fact that no other factors are taken into effect. As you said, David, the collateral damage. Okay, it's like when we got into, unfortunately, the war in Iraq. The collateral damage was not even imagined.
But this is the point. There's no – the way that our news system or whatever is designed – and I was reading a daily newsletter about UK politics, and it's – exactly. You either are going to look at things through the lens of this is happening right now and not deal with it in the broader context of and these are the results and understand that you're just pretty much reading a ticker. You know, this is what's happening right now. No. But because of the way we're set up here, it's what's happening right now leads to this conclusion. And the problem with that is that functionally, once you get down to trying to implement something, you see where there are massive gaps. And that's affecting, I believe, regular people, not people in the business, perception of what's going on.
I just, David, you know, I tie together things like this nowadays.
Well,
what's going on in Hong Kong, okay? The Chinese are very, very close to sending in troops. There's just no doubt about it. But think for a second here. The trade war with China that the United States has gotten into. Nobody has linked the fact that all this came up really after the trade war with China started. And this is just another implement that China can use in its trade war, which is creating all this confusion in Hong Kong, and they can take a little hit for it, but the media doesn't really. We know very little about the Chinese getting massing troops on the border before going into Hong Kong. We knew very little of investigative reporting on people looking into the timeline to when this was developed by the Chinese as to when. You know, in relation to when the trade war started. I mean, there's so many big stories.
Well, we're also not
stories.
Talking about Africa and yeah. how they're pulling stuff. There's so many pieces that, if what you're saying is there are so many pieces that aren't covered, but
there's so many pieces about America withdrawing from the world that aren't being covered and pointed out to people that, you know, it's a little too late for us to withdraw from the world.
Or there is a completely different narrative, quote, quote, being built around America's interactions with the world and the world's interactions with each other. It really depends on how you want to widen out the lens. But the fact is that the information is just being doled out in the most miserly fashion, which doesn't matter because people can't even retain it because they're so busy commenting and opining that they don't know the difference between, you know, a fact or not, or a truly amused me, sorry, but I'm perverse, is the demonstrations in both Russia and Moscow, Moscow and Hong Kong, and how many people were rounded up and and became unwell, in a way that your basic person who is choosing activism as a career path here has no clue about. You know, and it's like it is just really sad that you've got to be old to understand that that similar actions in different places beget different results. And it's just really
well. Part of the job of the media is to take the broad view whenever it can. What's distressing, I think, about a lot of coverage at the moment that sort of misses or doesn't even attempt to take in the idea of collateral damage, the idea of the unintended consequences, is largely due, I think, to something about the media which has gotten, which has quite definitely gotten worse as time has gone on. And its resources, the media industry's resources have been squeezed and squeezed as they have. And that's this. Journalism essentially depends upon its sources. And what is taking place now, and I think this applies to all of the problems that you've just been enumerating, is that all journalists are able to do, and this is a broad generalization now, but the danger is that all journalists are managing to do right now is rely upon the central source. Whenever we write a story, we journalists, we're dependent usually on a single source, and then we go around trying to buttress that story by talking to secondary sources. And if we're particularly assiduous in our work, we'll talk to people who are not involved, but who have a view and a knowledge about the area which is being affected in whatever the story is about. People who can possibly make an educated guess at what other things we need to bear in mind about it, other than what the agency, because it usually is an agency, that will provide us with the first impetus for the story, the press release or the leak or the quiet word in a bar about what is coming up. The journalist going around the possible other sources for to check on for this story will, of course, have a choice about how wide a lens, as you were just putting it now, how wide a lens to use. And the trouble is that the lens is getting narrower and narrower and narrower now. And so often the source is, just as you used in your vivid imagery, the ticker tape that just tells you the facts of now, or sometimes a little bit of prognostication into the future, but nothing of that considering the situation in the round and looking quite deliberately, because all actions have unintended consequences as well as intended ones. Part of the job of a journalist is to look at what are the likely unintended consequences as well. And it's not all mechanical. A happens, therefore B is bound to happen. You mustn't forget about all the other possibilities from C through to Z. And that's what's not being done now by the constrained and financially limited media industry as a whole. We're losing the view in the round.
And you're absolutely right. It's being constrained, and you there's absolutely other than some, you know, the odd hand wringing and weeping. I don't know who. It's funny. There is once again, when you get down to actual places, a real interest for what's going on locally and in different communities. But the way that it's being represented nationally is just so, I mean, again, except for the tut-tut, well, everybody's bought up and we can't work anymore and, you know, no one has a newspaper, but that's fine because they can all go on Facebook. You know, except for the occasional, gee, isn't that terrible? Nobody's doing squat, excuse my language, about it, doesn't seem. And so many.
Well, yes. I mean, it's a very hard problem to solve. I mean, we can't turn the clock back. We have to find new ways of doing what used to be in some ideal age, which may not exist. But I do think journalists did have a bigger sense of what their role was in terms of broadening the audience's views, as well as just giving them the lowdown on what is immediate and obvious.
And it would seem that there's still probably a few grown-ups out there in our last 4 minutes who could call their troops in and say, "Hey, kids, I have to tell you, I'm going to ask you. I'm not going to say anything about your other hometown newspaper. I'm going to ask you, being out there in the wilds of, you know, someplace more contemplative and out of the echo chamber slash bubble, do you find when you go into town or whatever, any difference in perception? Do you find that people are less? How do you find people?
Less edgy, I think, is the word. Yeah. I think this when you're in major conurbations, and if you're certainly in the eastern seaboard hothouse of politics and media. After all, I live in New York, and much of many of the stories that we're concerned with emanate from Washington. Just think of that Amtrak hub, the Acela link between New York and Washington. You'll find, I think, in both of those industry towns at either end, New York and Washington, you'll find a degree of nervous energy going on all the time, which has gotten really quite frantic since November 2016. And there is an edginess to the atmosphere as a whole, which I don't think I'm exaggerating. I have a very real sense of it. It's slightly different in both of those places. New York, very much aggressive in its response to this kind of agitated atmosphere. Washington, a lot more pessimistic generally. But the big change comes when you leave this corridor. And as I have now, and realize that people are still just getting on with their normal lives. And although there are some issues which, of course, come up, like the shootings, where people get very, very, both very sad and very angry at the same time. But there's a clarity to that sadness and anger when you don't have this sort of peculiar edge of the negative agitation and no general sort of hard to qualify but hard to define but very clear nervousness about what the hell is happening to us in both New York and Washington. In a rural, basically a rural state like this, people still know what the real values are, I think, and I'm not being over romantic about it. I don't think I'm just reporting on a very clear sense of the atmosphere when you talk to people.
And that's why we asked. So thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.